everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And welcome episode 165. SCG Con Syracuse is in the books. And Channel Fireball has been bought by TCG Player. But before we get into all of that, as always, Jerry, my man, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been really good. I've been doing more living in testing for my two events that are coming up this weekend and at the end of the month.
Excellent, excellent. What are you going to go play this weekend?
Living End.
Well, no, I mean, like, what event?
Oh, okay. Going to be going to an RCQ in Lamont, Illinois at Game Storm.
Oh, excellent. Good luck, man.
So that'd be it'd be a day trip for me. It's no longer 40 miles away. It's now 100 miles away for me, but it's worth it.
Okay. Over the weekend, I played a store championship with Crabvine. Kind of some tough lessons, right? It's been a while since I've played Paper Magic. And my play's not as tight as it used to be anymore. So some tough lessons learned there. Got to remember triggers. It's even more embarrassing whenever, like, you set aside the prized amalgams and you're like, okay, these are going to come in at the beginning of the next end step. And then you completely forget it. Yeah. And then what's even worse is you're playing against Burn and it's 9 power and you have a Gravecrawler in the yard and you have another Gravecrawler and you have 2 Vengevines in the yard. So really, you screwed yourself out of 1221 power, all because you forgot to bring out your prized amalgams. So, and it was on a second main phase on their turn, Otherworldly Gaze, that landed the Narc Amoeba, that came back, that should have brought back the prized amalgam. So on my turn, I could have cast both of those Gravecrawlers and gotten both of my Vengevines.
Dang.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good learning curve. You won't forget it now.
Exactly. And the biggest thing, like, I would say to anybody in those experiences, don't beat yourself up over it. Just learn from it. And that was one thing my opponent actually really liked was we chatted afterwards. And he's like, you stayed positive that entire match, even though you kept pointing out your own misplays. It's like, right, because if you're not learning from your own mistakes while you're playing and you just get upset with yourself, why are you playing the game? It's a game. We're here to have fun. And that's always my goal whenever I go to any event, is to have fun.
Yeah, no. If I'm not having fun, then I'm not doing it right.
I did get to teach one of my opponents. He was on a kind of like an Affinity Hammer Time build, if you will. Actually, I think it's more so just Hammer Time. But I swung with a Stitcher Supplier, and it was clearly going to dive anything he had blocked it. But he did. And then came the entire wave of, again, prized amalgams. I hit a prized amalgam, I hit a Narc Amoeba, and I hit a Creeping Cho. It was just the god of all gods blessed me that day with this one little creature. And that brought back the zombies, which the following turn then, because the Narc Amoeba came, I already had two in the I only had one prized amalgam in the yard at the time. But then the following turn, I was able to cast a Gravecrawler. I was able to cast my Merfolk Secret Keeper that was on an adventure, getting Vengevines out. And my opponent's like, what just happened? And I had to explain it to him because they had never seen a Crabvine either. And there's a lot of learning on that part. There's one guy, he was rooting for me the entire time. He's like, I love this dude. He's playing Crabvine. Let's get him in. Sadly, though, it didn't go too well. But again, the biggest thing was learning and ensuring that I have tighter play. This weekend, I'm going to another store championship down in Virginia Beach at Comet Kings. Next weekend, I'm going to an RCQ out in Chester, Virginia. And then the following weekend, Jerry at Chicagoland for the NRG Series Modern 10K.
Yeah, buddy. People are sick of me at my game store. they cannot stand me playing Living End anymore because it's all I play now in paper.
Gotcha. I mean, it's better than being like one of the, you know, millions of Ragavan decks that are out there. Like, at least you're doing something kind of different.
I mean, not really. It's Living End. It's a Cascade deck. People are familiar with it.
Well, like, yeah.
I have the choice between Burn and Crashing Footfalls and Living End, and I'm just going to play Living End until I decide I want to get back on the Footfalls train.
Yeah, but I mean, Living End, though, is on the lower end, and we'll get to that when we talk about the SCG Con Syracuse metagame and that. But before we get into any talks of that, we got some interesting news that came out, that being that TCG Player is buying Channel Fireball and, what is it, Binder Pro?
Binder POS.
Oh, Binder POS. So it's interesting how you read the two different companies, like CEO releases of it. So I used to sell on TCG Player. Anybody who sells on it, they received an email from the CEO of TCG Player and the founder stating that they have acquired it. Whereas if you read Channel Fireball's release about it, they see it more as a merger, not as so much of they sold it. And it's just minor, I would say, changes in verbiage of how they're going about describing it to make one seem like TCG Player, they're taking the big one on it, like, we just bought Channel Fireball. Channel Fireball is trying to maintain some good grounds of saying, hey, we're merging with TCG Player, instead of, hey, guys, we sold out.
Yeah, so nobody was really buying their content because people don't pay for content for Magic the Gathering creators. We know that. As much as we'd like to get paid for it, we do it as a labor of love, not a labor of cash. Yep. So that's part of their problem. They didn't have a big stock. They didn't have much to begin with as far as what they were selling. The big, big name store seller on the West Coast is Card Kingdom from Seattle. They have literally everything you can think of and then more. So they're out there. If you're talking just big name stores, they're competing. It's a David versus Goliath situation, and Goliath is winning this one.
Gotcha.
So Channel Fireball wasn't there, able to really sell anything. They attempted to venture into other card games. I did see that they had a small Pokemon stock, specifically a vintage stock, but that wasn't being moved anywhere because nobody really goes to Channel Fireball to look for Pokemon cards.
Right.
So now, what winds up happening here is that you have a mix of, we're not selling anything between our content or our cards, so they need money somewhere.
Now, weren't they like one of the leading content distributors when it came to Flesh and Blood? Like, they spearheaded it. Because I remember Channel Fireball was all over Flesh and Blood whenever it first released. I know LSV was doing some Flesh and Blood content for Channel Fireball. And yeah, there are some other things there.
But they're trying to make another card game happen. It's not going to happen. The card game thing is kind of set in stone at this point. You know, we tried it with bigger named franchises. There was an attempt at a Star Wars card game, Harry Potter card game. They've done the DBZ card game three times, rehashing an older version of the game, which actually was a mechanical failure. That's a different story. But it's pretty much at this point, the card game market is kind of saturated. We know the players know what the players want. Whenever anyone was playing Flesh and Blood, they were thinking, oh, this is just bad Magic.
Yeah, now I will kind of defend Flesh and Blood here. Star City Games did pick it up. It is being played at SCG Con events. It's like their second tier thing. It's actually popping pretty good down here. I know it's doing well down in like the Jax area. They actually have decent followings. So I don't know if it's maybe more of a regional thing, but like it's holding its ground through expansions.
I guess it's a regional thing because there is absolutely none in the Chicagoland area. Gotcha. I mean, granted, I'm on South Side. GameStorm has none. They don't even sell that. They sell like a couple of the boxes of the stuff just because they have it. They want to be the store that says, oh, I do have Flesh and Blood product, but they're not selling the stuff en masse. Like that's at least Southside Chicago. I remember Niles didn't have any, and I remember that's in the Niles is North Central area. And I remember that Berwyn, which is close to Midway Airport, had absolutely none. And that's a Pokemon store to begin with, Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! So it's, unless there's any going on at Hot Sauce or with NRG up in their area, up in the New Buffalo region, it just doesn't happen out here.
Let's get back on track here. So we're talking about the TCG Player and the Channel Fireball merger here. Do we think, or how do we think, this is going to affect, I would say, the card market, or maybe even other entities out there and possible mergers coming up within the main Magic content creation communities?
So my thought process, my first thought is card prices. I think some of them are actually going to go down.
Okay.
If TCG Player is getting hold of whatever stock they do have, if there's anything worth anything in there, certain prices of certain cards will go down. Like say that for some reason they had 50 Endurances in stock. Endurance will drop a little bit. I'm not saying it'll be a huge noticeable dip, but there'll be a general, you know what they say when you're talking about the rule of majorities is at the micro level, you don't see much, but at the macro level, if you take the 100 if you take the 100 most aggressive people, they're mostly just, for the majority of the time, they're mostly just men. That's kind of the idea here. If you take 100 of the most expensive cards and drop their prices, it's going to be some of the bigger name things.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, TCG Player is going nowhere. Like you said, they're going to receive whatever card stock and assets that Channel Fireball has. What I'm very hopeful of is, so Channel Fireball, way back before COVID, they were in charge of the, kind of like given the GP circuit, if you will, from WotC to manage across the US. And so they had all of their equipment. Now, we don't know the status of that yet. We don't know what still remains. We do know that Wizards of the Coast actually sold a lot of theirs so that they can promote all of their online stuff. And I think Star City has also done the same, which is why we haven't seen coverage from Star City Games, is that just even though they're having their events going on and they're making money off registrations and everything else, that there still hasn't been that return of coverage.
Nope.
TCG Player used to run their own events. 2016, 2017, and earlier, they had their own states tournaments. And those were just an absolute blast. Did them across it. I think they covered about 30 to 40 of the lower 48 states for the states events. They didn't do all of them because some states are small enough, especially when you get up in New England. You don't need to do one individual one for Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts.
And a lot of the West Coast states didn't have any because just not a population there. Like there was no Wyoming states, for example.
Right. So it would be interesting if with possibly the assets and the know-how that Channel Fireball team members have coming together with hopefully still the want of a grander tournament scene, because there's still a big gap there. The only thing we have right now are RCQs, which are cool, and SCG Con happening in the US. Right, there's no other major events, no other big NRG, the NRG series up there in the Midwest.
Yep, NRG in the Midwest, Star City in the East, nothing happened in the West, and we have a Pro Tour coming up within the year.
Yeah,
my thoughts are on the tournament scene, at least as far as Wizards is as far as Wizards has, because they originally gave the Pro Tour Channel Fireball, like you said, or not the Pro Tour, Grand Prix Circuit rather, to yes. Channel Fireball. They had control of all that. Now they're gone. Coverage isn't coming back. I don't think it ever will come back. The one-two punch of what were their names from the SCG?
You know, Patrick Sullivan and Cedric Phillips.
Them two. See, here's the problem. I don't even remember who they were, but they were the most likable people on camera and the most positive people for coverage at the time. And now that they're out of the coverage scene, nobody wants to do it.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and you've brought this up multiple times when it comes to anybody streaming Magic, and it is one of the reasons why Wizards of the Coast came out with Arena is paper Magic is boring to watch. Like, anybody can tune in to, like, League of Legends, Call of Duty, and, like, Valorant, and get excited about what's happening.
Because you at least have a general idea of what's going on. Like, the average spectator can figure that out.
With Magic the Gathering, not really. And then also, we went through the myriad of periods where you had incredibly boring matchups, whether it was Second Sunrise, KCI, Miracles Mirror Matches, whatever you want to say. Like, there was terrible times, but what made Patrick Sullivan and Cedric Phillips so awesome was they could kill that dead time, and they were hilarious. They were incredibly smart, very knowledgeable, and they would just start roasting card decisions that these players were making of, like, why is this card in the set? What is that? Or they just start talking about, like, random stuff they see happening in the event hall. You can't see it because you only see the match. But the banter, the chemistry between the two was fantastic. They tried to replicate it, but you never could.
Yeah. Most Magic players aren't journalists.
Yeah.
Hate to bring it to you. We all want to write content. We all want to make our own content. But none of us are the most camera-fluid folks ever. None of us are necessarily the best writers ever. This is a job meant for someone who actually has a degree in it. You know, that might be a start, but doesn't exist. You know, who wants to get a degree doing coverage for Magic events making $10,000 a year?
Yeah.
If that, like, that's me being generous on that number.
Yeah, like, we don't know what they're getting paid or anything like that, but obviously not enough to want to stick it out to make it a career. I mean, we've even seen some of the greats from the Grand Prix and the Pro Tour circuits step back from it. And I'm sure they had their own personal reasons, but, you know, because money isn't everything, right? But something was there where the job satisfaction had left them and they decided it was their time to move on. Whether it was they saw the writing on the wall of paper coverage is going to die, or it was just, you know, the travel expenses, everything else, and the dropping of certain perks possibly went away too. All of it's speculation, tinfoil hat theory, we don't know.
Right.
But I would have to agree. I think that's just going to lead to no return of paper coverage. Correct. You'll probably have your smaller stores that do it, your occasional streamer, definitely pop in and thank them for it. I know that was some of the biggest comments that we got back whenever we did video recording of games was they loved the paper Magic over the Magic Online Magic because it's just more organic at that point.
Yes. The other part, who's going to be running the Pro Tours and Grand Prix? I think it's just going to be Wizards. Grand Prix will still travel to wherever they're at or whatever they're called now, Magic Fests. They will always be Grand Prix in my heart. That's what I called them for 15 years previous to the name change. I don't think that's changing anytime soon.
Yeah.
But I think that what's going to happen is that my idea is going to come to fruition where all Pro Tours are going to be in Seattle.
I could see that. And the reason that I can see this in a way is look historically back with Star City Games. They did the exact same thing and slowly brought everything to Roanoke. Jerry, when we first started, when we got together as the Snapcast and started hitting the open circuit hard, 4 invitationals a year, all across the U.S. Like they went as far as, I believe, California in that 4 events, New Mexico or Phoenix. And then we saw the migration to, they only went west of the Mississippi, I think it was for Dallas, Fort Worth. And that was it, maybe Houston. And then we saw it go from 4 invitationals to 3 invitationals. And then it went from 3 different cities to all of them in Roanoke. Yep, and
the slow migration inward. I can remember a point when it was just Charlotte, Roanoke, DC.
Yeah. And also, too, the Opens were no longer every weekend. It was possibly like every other weekend. I think that happened with the Opens. I could be mistaken on that one. But it went from every week you had an Open. You had major events, a whole bunch of stuff that you can cover. And then it slowly dwindled away. Same thing with the invitational qualifier circuits. Like those just completely died off as well. IQs, super IQs, all fantastic events, but again, slowly dwindled off. And I would love to see that resurgence come back, but I don't know if that's actually possible in the near future. I think they would have to put a lot of hard work, dedication into it, try to take some L's in the profit column, sadly. And
that's not happening. That's never happening.
No, they're not going to do that. They're going to be like, oh, we made this much. We need to exceed that or match it again. They won't say that, oh, hey, we're still making a profit, but it's a smaller profit. They won't see that as a success. And I think that's kind of, I'm not a fan of that, but that's just me.
That's business. That's just business.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I miss the old days, man, of being able to pick up and go on any given weekend to an IQ and you start to see the same IQ grinders like, hey, how are you doing? How are things going? How's the job? Like just that, the gathering portion again, that was Magic. It's still there. We're slowly getting back to it, I would say, but I miss it.
Yep. Same here.
All right. But we do have paper events. We do have SCG cons and, we just had SCG con Syracuse. Pretty decent turnout. The main event had over 350 players, and I think that's kind of a good thing given the times. Like, a lot of people are still kind of, you know, protecting themselves against COVID. You got the people that don't want to go to larger events or the people that refuse to abide by the guidelines that the tournament sets. We're not here to talk about that, though. We're here to talk about the actual results. And, Jerry, this top 8 from their main event, I absolutely love. Because it is 8 different decks. It is like truly 8 different decks. It is not like 4 color elementals and 5 color Urion. No, it is everything.
Yeah, it is basically the amalgamation of the modern format. With the exception of one deck. I'll get to that in a little bit.
Yes.
But our top 8, first place was 4 color Urion with by the pilot Yicheng Jiang. He's a known MTGO player. He's been playing the Yorion Piles forever now. Is It Murktide by Matt Tumovich. Living End by Francisco Vargas, another big name on MTGO. Golgari Midrange, Daniel Walton. Eldrazi Tron by Damian Del Nero. He is the best Eldrazi Tron player in the world. This is the deck that he's been playing since the beginning of its inception, and he has mastered it to this point. Azorius Hammer by Kevin Thanakit in sixth place. Amulet Titan in seventh by Andrew Mathis. And Boros Burn, which I did not expect to be in the top eight at all, by Quinn Tanoli.
Yeah. No, this is like absolutely outstanding. You have aggro, you have combo, you have mid-range, you have, yeah, we have ramp. You kind of have, would you say we have a pseudo-control deck in here too?
The control deck, that would be more of a Murktide. Murktide is a control deck.
Yeah.
Like you want, people want to call it tempo, that's fine. But it's the four counterspell, three Archmage Charm deck. That's control to me.
Yeah, but like we have the spread. And this is one thing I absolutely love about Modern. When it comes to these significantly larger events, is you can play anything. And let me tell you, looking at the metagame breakdown, you truly can.
And it's paper, so people play with what they have.
Yeah.
It's a huge part.
One of the biggest benefits to, I would say, kind of the loss of the Wizards, what was it, their matchmaking program, whatever that crap was that always crashed and resulted in Charlotte 2016 and Vegas 2017, is that we have all of the data right here. We have all 350 some odd decks and the entire metagame breakdown brought to you by MTG Melee. So it's wonderful to see, because you can scroll through and see all the crazy decks that were being run, like Mono Black Cabal Coffers. People will still play Spirits. You got one Spirits player there, Belcher. Jerry, somebody tried Ad Nauseam.
Yeah, sure. Have fun, bro. If you like right. it. there was Prison Tron, yep. which was a very popular deck popping off, was coming back. Shaheen playing Azorius Control to a 60-second place. It's on there. Everything is here. There are no hidden data points. That's the important thing to get across here.
Yeah. Old Shaheen Serrani will always be on Control. You know, the top 64... still really good finish. I know he's not happy with it. He started off outstanding. I believe he started off 5-0. And that was the last tweet I saw from him.
He played blue-white control. That is your first problem. That is the deck I would not have come to this tournament with.
Yep.
If there was a series of decks that I would not come with and based on all archetypes, blue-white control would have been the bottom of my list on control piles.
Gotcha.
Wouldn't have touched it, but whatever.
Yep. It was fairly even here with the two decks, or with the top two decks, that being Burn and Murktide, both coming in at about 29 and 28. Then you had Death Shadow, Amulet Titan, Crashing Footfalls, Hammer Time, and five color Omnath, and then lastly Yawgmoth closing out the top eight. But that's also tied with Is It Control.
Yep. Is It Control. People don't necessarily know this list. It's Blue Moon featuring Snapcaster Mages and Murktide Regents as Ooh. Your win conditions.
Oh, nice.
Three Blood Moons, that type of thing.
Gross. Okay. So, yep, I need to figure out how to beat those. Yeah, no, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Anyways, sorry. but there are some really interesting decks here and some certain cards that we do want to go over, because they haven't seen play in a while, or they've kind of like just fallen off the wayside. So, Jerry, what do you want to talk about first when it comes to this top eight, or well, some of the cards here?
Well, let's talk about the winner's deck list. Yicheng Jiang on four color Yorion.
Okay.
He's on the big power money pile. Four Ragavans, four Ren and Six, four Teferi Time Raveler. But the card I want to talk about most is the singleton copy of Emrakul, the Promised End, over the one copy of Endurance in his deck. The point of this card is to beat the Mirror or other grindy matchups. Emrakul, the Promised End is a reasonably castable card with a pseudo-delve-like mechanic on it where it gets cheaper based on the card types in your graveyard. So this is the biggest endgame thing that you can do in Modern at a reasonable cost.
Absolutely. It was a house when it came out in Standard, and definitely made waves because... It has that Mind Slaver effect to it, but you still have that 13-13 body that you have to also try to deal with at the end of the day.
Now, the 1313 body is pretty easy to deal with Solitude, but the Mindslaver effect is actually worse in Modern because of all of the free spells.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, is like, because you can easily sabotage your opponent at that point. Like, say they didn't draw into that Solitude yet, or they had set up for the draw, or something like that. As soon as it's their turn, you get to destroy their hand at that point.
Yep, you get to destroy their hand and their board with relative ease.
Yeah.
So Emrakul the Promised End's Mindslaver ability is that much more backbreaking in current Modern.
Yep. It's really unique to see that this actually has been pushed mainboard. I believe there are a couple lists that were trying to run it in the sideboard. I know when Sean was actually looking at picking up the Yurion list, he sent me a deck list, and in that stack of cards that I had set aside for him was a one of Promised End, but it wasn't a mainboard card.
No, in most cases it wasn't. That was a metagame call, and apparently it was the right one, because he got it when he needed it in the correct times. The two copies of Eldamri's Call on the list will definitely guarantee that you're going to have this card every time you want this card.
Yep. All right. So what do you got next?
Next, I want to talk about the fourth place deck, Golgari Midrange. That's a blast from MH2's past. When MH2 was first dropped, people were enamored by Azmarano, Mardika, Dastan, Akoldakar, and the entire kitchen setup. The big card I want to talk about, let's go with the Finale of Devastation first.
Yeah, okay, let me get that pulled up here. I got the deck list up for those that want to see it. So this is like your typical food list, I would say. This is almost what people were doing in Standard with the Feasting Troll King and everything else, with the exception, obviously, of Street Wraiths, right?
Yes. Street Wraiths weren't in. Asmo wasn't in. And at the short period of time, they had Oko,
yeah,
which was a thing. This is kind of the evolution of the dedicated I Am the Oko deck list.
Absolutely. But the main Oko. Yeah, but the main card you said you wanted to talk about here was Feasting Troll King.
Yep. All right. We'll talk about Feasting Troll King here. So, 4 green and 2 for a Troll Noble. Vigilance Trample for 7 power and 6 toughness. When Feasting Troll King enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, create 3 foods. Sacrifice 3 foods, colon, return Feasting Troll King from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this ability only during your turn. Even though it's only during your turn, it is instant speed, so you can do it during an upkeep or an end phase in response to an endurance or something. Like, it's still instant speed, so an endurance on your turn, you can still activate the ability.
Gotcha. Just a
noteworthy trick there.
Yeah.
But it's the big payoff for being this food deck. Being able to keep recurring over and over again Feasting Troll King is fantastic. This deck choice for this room was 100% on point. If I knew I was going to be in a room with 12% of the players playing, you know, an Izzet pile, and 12% of the players playing a burn pile. I'm throwing numbers there, but because those were the majority decks, that is a deck I would certainly play. The Cauldron Familiar Witches of Enloop, which actually got banned in Standard, is lights out for burn. And yep, the ability to keep looping back Feasting Troll King over and over again past Unholy Heats and being bigger than Murktide region most of the time is what keeps this deck going.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely powerful. And then one of the spells, too, in this deck is an awesome choice as well.
Yes, Finale of Devastation. Green, green X sorcery. Search your library and or graveyard for a creature with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. Search your library this way, shuffle it. If X is 10 or more, creatures you control get plus X, and gain haste until end of turn. You usually don't hit that last part of the text. It can happen, though. You are a Gilded Goose deck, and you do have copies of Yavimaya to allow even the few fetch lands you run to produce mana. So that is a possibility. But what we're really playing this for is for green-green and make X0 to put Asmo on the battlefield from any zone, kind of bypassing her restrictive cost of I have to have discarded a card to cast it this turn for its madness or for its alternate cost.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely there. Now, I've had many a fun time playing with Finale Devastation. However, that fun time was in a completely different deck, that being Devoted Company, Devoted Devastation, Counters Company, whatever you want to call it. and I could absolutely activate this last part. And nothing is better than killing your opponent with a swarm of birds of paradise that have just been absolutely jacked with the greatest steroids that you can find.
Right. Well, we are playing. It doesn't happen as often here, but we're using this to bypass Asmo's cost of actually playing it. And there's enough cards in here with Underworld Cookbook, Street Wraith, and Finale to get it onto the battlefield cheaply and consistently.
Yeah. All right. What do you want to talk about next here? I think I know the next deck list you want to bring up, that being the Hammer list.
Yes, the Azorius Hammer list from Kevin Thanakit. This is a little less on the deck itself and more of a sideboard choice that's becoming pretty much the regular now. And a lot of my fellow Cascade players are not paying attention to it fairly enough.
Yeah, we got the deck list up right now. Sorry to cut you off. And it's your pretty standard, I would say, deck list of what we've moved to in the Hammer Time decks. But yeah, like you said, he has two copies of a very unique card in here, Jerry, which I absolutely just enjoy.
Yep, that's a Lavinia Azorius Renegade. White and a blue for legendary creature, human soldier, a 2-2, so a typical hate bear stat line. Each opponent can't cast non-creature spells with converted mana cost greater than the number of lands that player controls. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. So it's a creature Chalice of the Void effect on Living End and Crashing Footfalls.
Yep.
This has become a normal mainstay. It was in humans for the longest time, but humans has since, you know, gone to the wayside to the issues of Fury and Renin 6. But Lavinia finds a home here in that we were already playing blue for Spell Pierce and Reality Chip.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Be more prepared for it. Most of the time in, you know, pre-Lurrus ban, against Hammer, we were just siding in all of our naturalized effects, Foundation Breakers and Force of Vigor, in both the Cascade lists. Now Subtlety should be your normal addition to the sideboard, in addition to some combination of artifact, enchantment, hate.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy what we're seeing with this is nothing new or like profound what I'm going to say, but like these incarnations we got from Modern Horizons 2 are just continuing to show their power with it, and it kind of continues to give some more ground to the player base's complaints about these Modern Horizons sets, and that is Modern rotates with every Modern Horizons set now. Yes. We saw the big rotation that happened, and I use that loosely, right? No sets got banned, but when Modern Horizons first came out, we saw the massive shift that happened, and then Modern Horizons 2 came out, and again, we saw the massive shift. It's great. It shakes it up, but one thing that modern players like is that whenever a new set comes out, they're not having to drop a few $100 to keep that deck relevant anymore.
Or this case, a few $1,000.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real here. We're talking about real money drops here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, this is kind of getting absurd. Hopefully it calms down a bit. We don't have like Modern Horizons 3 anywhere near in the future. Just keep it calm. Don't shake it up too much. Is that too hard to ask? Come
just
on.
Leave my Modern alone.
Yeah, right.
Lavinia also hits the incarnation cycle, by the way. So, you know, whenever they cast a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, is countered.
That is true.
So more reason that the card sees play. It wouldn't surprise me if a Hammer player got cheeky and played 2 in the main deck one day.
Yeah.
Just said, you know what? I'm going to play a bunch of Cascade today. Let's play these Lavinia in the main.
No, I like it, yeah.
All right. And one last card I want to talk about.
Okay, what do you got?
Really surprised me. In 12th place, we had 5-color Indomitable Creativity. Ooh. And with the biggest thing is that the Creativity decks have gone to Archon of Cruelty, being that card is actually castable in their deck. With Renin 6, they're going to be able to actually just pay the mana for it in the event that they can't get their combo off. So that's a good move in the right direction. But the card I want to talk about is the Singleton copy of Transmogrify.
Yeah, I already had that up. I knew exactly where you're going with this.
All right, so 3 and a red for a sorcery. Exile target creature. That creature's controller reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal a creature card. That player puts that onto the battlefield, then shuffles the rest into their library. Just like Indomitable Creativity, Transmogrify can only hit one card in the deck, and that's Archon of Cruelty. It's the fifth copy of Indomitable Creativity. Just want you to be aware of it. The important thing to remember is that, like, if you're playing a Gaddock Teague effect, that does shut off Creativity, but it doesn't shut off Transmogrify.
Yeah. An interesting thing about this card, though, and the selection, I would say, is there's another card that's exactly like it, with the exception of one word and its color, that being Polymorph. Polymorph is 3 and a blue, still a sorcery, but instead of exiling the creature, it destroys the creature. So why do you think, other than just the color choice, why do you think they went with Transmogrify over Polymorph? Think there is actually any reason for that?
It's the color choice if you're playing copies of Fury.
Gotcha.
If you decide to do a sideboard swap and play a more fair deck where we're gonna play a weird mid-range pile.
Okay.
That would be my thought process behind that. Beyond that, it says exile target creature. Does Polymorph target other players' things? It does not. It's only your own. Yep. Then I see no functional difference in this list that I have here. Okay, yeah. Take it back. There is. Not being blue means you're not – being red means you're not going to get got by Mystical Dispute.
Ooh, there you go. Okay.
So that might be your hedge. Like, yep. Okay. So in this list, that might be your hedge. In other lists, I've seen Furies in the sideboard to play a different type of game altogether.
Okay. And then, Jerry, I have one card I want to talk about here. Let me get it up. That being a... So this came out of the Modern 5K. We had Jund actually do pretty well. Ended up at a 501 in the Modern 5K. So it was like one of the side events that they had. And a nice new addition was Riveteer's Charm. Or Jund Charm, if you will. But it's not Jund Charm or anything like that. So this one is 1 black, 1 red, 1 green, and you get to choose one. Target opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker they control with the highest mana value among creatures and planeswalkers they control. Exile top 3 cards of your library until next end step. You may play those cards or exile target player's graveyard.
This is a pure upgrade to Jund Charm itself, where original Jund Charm was... put +1/+1 counters somewhere, exile a graveyard, and pyroclasm. Because the creatures aren't, we're not going wide in this modern anymore because of the existence of Fury. We're playing bigger permanents. The fact that Riveteer's Charm can hit planeswalkers and creatures is massive upside.
Yep.
Also, being 3 mana draw 3, basically, at instant speed. And Jund is exactly what the deck needed. Like, if we're going to play random value, I would rather play this over a Bloodbraid Elf.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense.
And then another way to just exile target player's graveyard tacked on to another card. The deck was already playing some copies of Endurance or even more black-oriented versions of the deck. They were playing Dothi Voidwalker. But Riveteer's Charm is just another way to beat those decks. Beat the graveyard deck, specifically Living End. Forcing them to respect this, keeping Force of Will in the deck. So, or not Force of Will, Force of Negation in the deck. Because in usual sideboard matchups, is we just take out those forces and we're playing subtleties to answer their creatures. This is not a creature-based answer. So it's just more options in a deck that wants the most out of its cards that it can get.
Yeah, and it's, I would say, kind of like what you said too, just to echo it, it is significantly more relevant to what we're going against now. In the meta than compared to Jund Charm.
Now, could there be a day and age where Fury gets banned and go wide decks come back and we decide to play a copy of Jund Charm? Possibly. I don't see that happening anytime soon, though.
You know, I'm thinking about being a crazy man and possibly just for like an FNM or something, sleeving up Counters Company and seeing what happens.
Look, man, if you want to play a company deck, you got to play the one with Undying Creatures. That's just how you got to do it.
Yeah, I know. And I could. I've got that built out ready to go. No, I think if I deviate from Kravon at all, it's going to be playing Titan Shift again.
Okay.
Or Titan Wish or Valor Wish or...
All right, it's still Titan Shift.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get to play, instead of playing a bunch of dead cards in your main deck, you get to play wishes, which are not dead.
Yeah.
They are whatever you need them to be when you need them to be.
Exactly. It's fantastic. I already bragged about it last week. I'm not going to do it again. Love,
like,
the card.
Not the place I expected to see Wish. Never expected it there. But apparently it's the best that's the best place for it. Because Storm is just not a deck anymore in the current modern era.
Right.
So, going on the metagame analysis on Syracuse, being that it's paper, people play with what they play, right?
Yep.
Okay. We can we'll make the assumption and say about half to three quarters of these folks travel to these events on the regular.
Yeah.
Because SCG stays on the East Coast for the most part, meaning it's relatively inexpensive to get to, from place to place. So let's assume that the metagame is going to maintain a lot of the same decks.
Okay. So we're saying the metagame is pretty much like what you would go to MTG Goldfish and possibly find what their top 10 is going to be.
Yes. Assuming that, you know, we got Burn and Murktide Regent and Death Shadow as our three biggest decks in the format.
Yep.
This is what I would play if I were to go to an SCG event. Obviously, the big obvious elephant in the room is a four-color list, but I wouldn't play the one that Yi Chang played with Ragavan. I would play the Elementals pile.
Okay.
Because Elementals still just houses Burn, and half of Murktide Regent is dead. Half of the Murktide Regent spells in the deck are just dead to Cavernous Souls and the amount of value you get out of Risen Reef. Same with Death Shadow. It just can't—they can't keep up with pound for pound playing four color elementals. The two other decks, and they found the hole in the metagame. The Golgari Midrange Kitchen deck. Again, that deck goes pound for pound, just beats Murktide Regent into the ground. They're not going to be able to keep up with them card for card with copies of Trail of Chromes and the Cat Oven Wombo combo, as well as just being a better Urza Saga deck for this matchup. Like, if I was like playing Amulet Titan, yes, it's a very good Urza Saga deck, but it is much worse off against Murktide Regent than, say, Golgari Midrange. Okay. Your Thought Seize deck. And the other one was the obvious, that was Eldrazi Tron. Nobody in the top 10 decks is playing any type of Blood Moon right now.
Yeah.
So being able to just go Natural Tron and do things is where you want to be. And Eldrazi Tron has a much better burn matchup than traditional Tron.
Gotcha. And is that just because of how aggressive Eldrazi Tron can be with the turn 2 Thought Knot Seers and then into the turn 3 Reality Smashers?
Right. It plays a better suite of cards that are better suited to dealing with burn. On top of that, Chalice of the Void on, you know, a turn 2 Chalice of the Void on 1 is still an acceptable play against burn.
Yeah.
The only other deck that I would consider that's not anywhere in here, if I were going to, knowing that I was going to play against a bunch of burn and a bunch of Murktide Regent, I would play, going through my brain right now, I would play a Rakdos midrange deck going into this weekend. I would play almost, not necessarily a Shadow list. I want to go bigger than Shadow. It's almost basically Jund, where I would play Dothi Voidwalker, Ragavan, Kroxa, stuff like that. I think that's where I would want to be.
Nice. I've actually ran into those lists.
Yeah, because those are pretty good, pretty great answers against Murktide Regent. Very powerful deck against Death Shadow. Being a Blood Moon deck itself, it can answer Amulet Titan and any four-color pile with a consistent turn 2 Blood Moon, which is possible. And being that they are only a two-color deck, they're not punished on their mana base to not being able to deal with burn as much as they could be.
Okay.
So nice. That's my take. Playing, obviously, if you have the money for it, 80-card Yorion Elementals. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two would be, and because people are now going to see Kitchen and Eldrazi Tron, and it's going to be on their radar at these events. So they're going to cater their sideboards to these two decks. Because, you know, there's going to be some number of people that have them that just haven't been playing them and then realize, oh, it's pretty good in this meta. They're going to play them. So those two decks are going to take, you know, kind of people are going to be gunning them down. So okay. I would be very interested in a Rakdos midrange pile at an SCG con coming up.
All right. Well, you heard it from Jerry himself. I'm just going to be wild and continue to slam crabs because, well, that's what I enjoy doing. I will say though, I don't think I saw in the actual metagame or in the meta breakdown if there were any Titan Shift lists that were played.
The Titan Shift list, I mean, it's probably five color Omnath is where they were on, where they do the bring to light thing.
Okay.
That might be one. I know what you're talking about, and it's definitely, I just didn't see any copies of it.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing it in the meta breakdown at all. And what I really like about that is the deck is very resilient, in that even against, in the face of like Blood Moons or that, which clearly aren't being run based on what we just saw in the top eight, the deck is very resilient. With the Wish package, you have so much more that you can grab from outside the game and play. You're protecting yourself against any kind of hand or deck disruption to try to pull one of your main combo pieces. You have multiple avenues that you can kill with the deck. Still a strong proponent of it, but I think the Ren and Sixes for this deck are actually very viable when it comes to the execution of it, because guaranteeing those land drops, ensuring you don't miss them, having those four Ren and Sixes in there, I think are significantly better than any of the other random pieces that we used to have, whether it was Prismatic Omens, which now get covered by your Dryad of Elysian Groves. The two mana enchantment that whenever it gets three counters on it, you're able to fetch off, sacrifice, and get three basics and put them on the field. Calling Heart Expedition. Like, some of those cards are okay, but you just need to be significantly quicker. And I think especially now in today's modern, you really have to be on that edge.
I mean, who would have thought the Planeswalker that cares about lands would be good in the lands deck?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
we did it. We did it, guys. We're getting there.
I mean, it only took a few years for them to figure that out, but yeah.
Only a few.
But I think that's going to do it for us today. Jerry, as always, it's been a blast. For everybody else, oh, quick shout out to our sponsor, completely forgot, got all caught up, Deep Dive Games down in Kingsland, Georgia. Be sure to check them out. Deep Dive Games is owned by one of our own, Matt Davis. So awesome to, after he got his store up, I was able to go to him and get the sponsorship. So we've got their sweet logo on our jerseys here. And anytime you're down in Kingsland, Georgia, definitely check them out. It's more than just Magic Shop. They also got board games, D&D, everything you could want out of a local game store. So definitely check them out. Also, you can see them online as well. And stop by and tell them that Rob and Jerry said hi. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Oh, snap.